With 76 million visitors in the United States last year, MySpace continues to be the nation's most popular website. But unlike many of its competitors, MySpace wasn't started by a group of high-tech engineers. It's the brainchild of a couple of marketing execs who dabbled in computer hacking, pornography, and spam. Julia Angwin, an award-winning journalist at The Wall Street Journal, chronicles the rise of MySpace and the social networking phenomenon in her new book called Stealing MySpace, The Battle to Control the Most Popular Website in America. It's published by Random House. I'm delighted that it brings Julia Angwin to the show today. Hello.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So what do you mean, stealing MySpace?
There's a couple different kind of thefts that occur. But, you know, MySpace, first of all, stole the idea for its site from Friendster, which was the hot site of its time. It was the Facebook of its era. And then MySpace itself was sold to Rupert Murdoch without the knowledge of the founder. So behind the parent company that owned them sold them without their knowledge. And that was they considered that, you know, a theft.
Now, how did Friendster work and why didn't it take off the way that MySpace and Facebook have?
So Friendster was very similar to Facebook in that it wanted people to be who they were and have their real identity online and be friends with people they really knew. And a lot of people felt really constricted by that. There was a group of people that called themselves the Fakesters, and they wanted to be fake. They wanted to be Leonard Lopate, or they wanted to be Homer Simpson.
There were all those jokes about how do you know that cute girl who you're talking to is even a girl?
Exactly. So they wanted to enforce some sort of authenticity online, which is difficult to do. And so MySpace decided that a competitive advantage they would have would be to welcome all those people and say, you can be whoever you want to be. Now, of course, that's cut both ways for MySpace. Every day there's a story of people donning the mask of anonymity to ill effect on MySpace.
Now, could they just steal the Friendster idea? Wasn't it copywritten?
No, that's the beauty of the internet. All these ideas are just circling around, and they didn't steal the code, which is what the only thing you can really get caught for. I mean, look, Facebook is basically Friendster, but Facebook has innovated. What happens is people have an idea on the internet, but then they innovate, and it's actually so exciting to see an industry that's actually in the process of expanding and growing like that while the rest of our world is contracting.
Tell us about Krista Wolf and Tom Anderson, the guys behind MySpace. How did they meet?
So they met when they were working together at a website called xDrive, which was basically back when there wasn't enough memory on your computer to store your files. They would do it for you on the web. And Krista Wolf hired Tom Anderson, who had literally just seen a flyer. He was a struggling musician wandering around the streets of LA. He saw a flyer saying, like, get $20 to express your opinions in a focus group. He came in, and he actually had really good ideas. And that was 2000, and all these companies had money to burn, so they hired him right away and told him to think up marketing ideas. And Chris, a very smart businessman, realized that Tom was a real idea factory, and he took him with him when he started up his startup, which was called ResponseBase, and they were the ones who started off sending spam.
How long did they start doing the spam, which is partly illegal now, isn't it?
I mean, the thing is, at that time, there were not the rules that we have now about getting consent for unsolicited email. So, you know, what they were doing was probably on the fringes of the internet economy, but not necessarily illegal.
They also do some hacking, which is illegal?
Tom did hacking when he was in high school. So he was what was called like a phone freak. People would tap into phone networks and rudimentary email systems just for fun, really. They were more like it was like that movie War Games. But by the time he was older, he wasn't as much of a hacker. And they were really trying to sell. They were trying to make money on the internet because the bubble had burst. And there was no venture capital funding. So they actually needed to make real revenues and profits. So the best way to do that, in their opinion, was to send unsolicited email. And then they also started selling their own goods through email. Spy cameras you could hide in your shoe, books on how to grow taller, all sorts of crazy stuff.
And then in 2003, they came up with MySpace.
Yeah, their business was falling apart. Spam was getting regulated. All their remote control cars were getting returned to sender. And they needed a new business model. And they had actually sold themselves to another company called Intermix. And that company was going to shut down their division if they didn't come up with another idea. And they were really imitation artists. They were very good at imitating good ideas on the internet. And so they saw Friendster and imitated it.
Well, MySpace is a nice name, but it was already taken, wasn't it?
Yeah, they bought the name from an xDrive competitor called MySpace that was had gone under. It was also offering a place to store your files online. That's why it was called MySpace.
How much money did they need to buy that domain name?
I think they paid $5,000.
Not all that much. Obviously, MySpace wasn't a thriving business.
No, they bought it when the site went under, so I think it was more of a fire sale.
What kind of hardware do you need to launch a social networking site like MySpace?
You know, they launched it really on a shoestring. They just had a couple servers and...
Two Dell computers.
Yes, right. You know, it was small then, right? Now, you can't imagine the amount of hardware involved in running it now.
And how long before it caught on?
It took actually not that long. They launched it in August of 2003. And by the end of 2004, it was really on a tear.
And that was before broadband really became ubiquitous.
Yeah, you know, the U.S. was just getting wired for broadband. It was becoming ubiquitous right around the time that they launched. And they really benefited from that huge surge because people suddenly wanted to upload photos and do things that they couldn't have done on a dial-up that were just too bandwidth heavy. So MySpace benefited because it offered a place to put your photos and to show off your multimedia.
And how did it wind up reaching so much of the teen market?
Well, you know, teen girls have always been really interested in decorating. You know, they decorate their lockers, decorate their textbook covers. And MySpace really appealed to them because MySpace let you customize your page with glitter and music and dancing graphics. And so girls really were the first ones to get excited about MySpace.
You say that by 2004, only about a year after the launch, about 50% of teens had online content?
Yes, right. Teens were really ahead. They, their parents didn't really know what they were doing. You know, that was part of MySpace's problem is that kids got on it first before their parents really knew what was happening. And the problem about MySpace, once again, is anonymity. It's a place to be anonymous. And so parents sort of belatedly found out that their kids were sort of masquerading online as someone else, and that scared them.
And they were also developing relationships with strangers.
Yes, exactly. The whole premise of MySpace, because it's an anonymous place, is that you don't actually claim to be really offline friends with somebody when you friend them on MySpace. So it doesn't imply a real friendship. And that is, you know, that's scary to put your teens out in a place where they're meeting people you don't know.
My guest is Julia Angwin of the Wall Street Journal, an award-winning journalist there, writes about the convergence of technology and media. And she's written a book called Stealing MySpace, The Battle to Control the Most Popular Website in America. It's published by Random House. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, you said that one of the reasons that it became popular is because they allowed for the fakesters. But isn't there a downside to that?
There is. There's a real downside to having an anonymous place online. And every day there's another story of, you know, a girl going to meet somebody she met on MySpace and it ending badly.
A sexual predator.
Yeah.
And con artists are also.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, these places have to be treated very cautiously. On the other hand, I think we need, as a society, places to congregate in public anonymously. That's a right that we have. The question is whether kids should be allowed in those places, and if so, how? Facebook provides a little bit more security because you use your real name, but the thing is, they don't check that you're really who you are. They don't have a big database of everybody, and so it's not quite as safe as it seems either.
According to a report in the Washington Post today, campus police are scanning Facebook and MySpace pages for tips on how to break up fights, monitor gangs, and prevent crime. And although some students have protested, the cops say that they can prevent serious trouble simply by spotting online spats.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the law enforcement officers have been the first people to really realize the potential of using MySpace to spot crime and to get ahead of it.
Were people talking about planning out crimes?
Yeah, there's
well,
been
let's
many.
Let's get together and kill somebody.
Yes, absolutely. There's been many people who've threatened to shoot up their school on MySpace, and it's been caught before. You know, we don't know how serious those threats are, but yeah, actually, the police have been really smart about using MySpace to figure out what is being planned, and they have access to who really is behind the anonymous names.
What about? In fact, but you can actually you can change your privacy settings, can't you?
On MySpace, you can. It's not as finely tuned as Facebook's privacy settings. So on Facebook, you have a lot of control over each and every item on your page, your photo. You can restrict to certain people and then other information. Whereas MySpace, it's a much more blanket privacy controls. But yes, you can make your profile private. But part of the appeal of MySpace is the voyeurism, and most people keep their profiles public.
So that's why a person might go to one rather than the other? Voyeurism?
Yeah. MySpace has really thrived on voyeurism.
Such as? What would how would the voyeurism work?
Well, I mean, Tila Tequila, okay, she started her career on MySpace. She posed in little bikinis, and she promoted herself as sort of a sexy but just on the edge of porn. And she got a lot of friends, and now she has an MTV show and has managed to make a career out of that. And amassing large numbers of friends like that and creating your brand on MySpace is really what I mean by voyeurism.
Also has been helped by the interests of musicians.
Yes, and bands have really had a great experience on MySpace. MySpace was early to recognize that they needed a place to market themselves, that the traditional music industry publishing cycle was leaving a lot of bands out. And so they made a home for them. And even now, music is really the core of MySpace.
Facebook has become more popular among baby boomers. So are mom and dad likely to also be on MySpace?
Yes, actually, both Facebook and MySpace have become more popular with the older crowd, I guess you would call it.
So people, many people might be on both?
Yeah. If you're,
what do they do with the rest of their lives? Doesn't this take a lot of energy and time?
It does. I always argue, though, that we overestimate how much time younger people are spending online and underestimate how much time older people are spending
online.
Well,
I'm a very slow typist.
But, you know, older people have more professional reasons to go online. It's a good way to market yourself. And they also have more incentive to monitor their children's activities.
You say that MySpace has a get it out fast, fix it later attitude, while Facebook operates a bit differently.
Yeah. Facebook is a traditional Silicon Valley company, and they have a respect for technological innovation. They hire really smart engineers, and they have rolled out their changes in most of the time in ways that have not impacted users, at least technically. There have been some community outcries about some of their changes. MySpace, in its early days, was a marketing company. Their idea was just get a feature out, and if it proves popular, then make it fit. Fix it up and make it work. But if it has some bugs, you know, no point in fixing it until they decide whether it was popular.
You said when I asked about your title, Stealing MySpace, that not only was the idea stolen, but then the company was stolen in an odd way when Rupert Murdoch bought it.
Yes.
He bought Intermix, actually.
Right.
So the two creators had no idea that Intermix was being sold to Rupert Murdoch?
They were kept in the dark deliberately. Intermix had an incentive to sell itself before MySpace could sell. And they knew MySpace was in talks with MTV. And they were worried that MySpace would sell itself before Intermix, the parent company, had a chance to sell itself.
Well, could they have sold themselves from even though they were owned by a parent company?
They could, because they had an unusual clause in their relationship with their parent company that allowed them that if they sold for more than $125 million, they would be able to block Intermix from selling itself. And basically, Intermix realized at a certain point MySpace was becoming so popular that it was very likely that MySpace would exercise that clause because it was definitely worth more than $125 million. So Intermix realized if it didn't sell itself fast and quietly, it would lose the value of its very popular subsidiary.
And they sold themselves for $600 million. Was that a good price at the time?
At the time, it was considered very high. It was really almost about $700 all in when you count all the stock option payouts.
Were there any sales on the internet that were for more money at that point?
No, that was the highest at that moment. And Rupert Murdoch's got a lot of heat for it. On Wall Street, his stock was down for a couple months. But now in the fullness of time, it looks like it was a pretty good deal. MySpace is profitable, and he has made his money back.
And have Krista Wolf and Tom Anderson made any money from the deal?
Well, so they did not make that money from much money on the initial sale, but Rupert was very smart, and he came to them right away and said, I want to keep you on, and I'm going to give you very lucrative pay packages, and he has done that.
They could have also marketed themselves on MySpace, couldn't they?
That's right.
A caller wants to know just how people market themselves on these websites.
It's actually pretty simple. You put up a page about yourself or your small business. If you're a big business, you have to pay to set up that page. But small businesses like a local shop can do it for free. And then you go about amassing friends. And the more friends you have, they basically give you permission to send them emails and bulletins and notices about your business.
And how do you amass those friends? They have to know about you, don't they?
You go out and you send them friend requests, and then they either accept or decline.
I get friend requests sometimes from Facebook, but since I already have a Facebook site, I mean, it usually says you can sign up. Part of the deal is you sign up with Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I'm already signed up with Facebook, why would I even care whether this stranger gets in touch with me or not?
They should find you on Facebook and send you the friend request there.
Well, I have no idea how any of that works. I'm an old fogey. Why was Rupert Murdoch so interested in buying MySpace? What was he hoping that it would do for his media empire?
You know, he had, like a lot of media moguls, been burned in the first dot-com bubble around 2000. And he had stepped back and said, you know, that I just paid too much for a lot of assets that weren't worth anything. But around 2004, he realized that he needed to get back in. He saw that advertising dollars were moving to the internet, and he wanted to be there because that's his business model is – he provides, you know, he basically is an advertising company. So he looked around, and he hired McKinsey to come up with a list of different places that he could buy. But once he realized that MySpace was for sale, he did it, the deal, very fast in 3 days.
And you say he's made back his money.
He did.
Selling advertising?
Yeah, he did.
It's rough to sell advertising today.
It is, but he, in 2006, he cut a deal with Google that guaranteed $900 million in revenues for MySpace over a 3.5-year period. So he was very smart to move quickly and to monetize MySpace.
Well, that deal is going to end soon, and we'll talk about that when we come back from a break. But I one more question before we go into the break. How much independence does MySpace have in the Murdoch empire? Because he is – I know he's your boss – but he is famous for meddling. He's changed the very popular front page of the Wall Street Journal, that front page that people just adored because he didn't like it.
Yes, he is a meddler. He's also very respectful of entrepreneurs because he is an entrepreneur himself. And so he has allowed the MySpace founders to run the site with not so much supervision for the past 4 years. And it's not all been good because they haven't kept the site up to speed with technology. It's lacking in features.
My guest is Julia Angwin, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with the Wall Street Journal. Her book, Stealing MySpace, The Battle to Control the Most Popular Website in America, is published by Random House. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Julia Angwin. Her book, Stealing MySpace, is published by Random House. And the subtitle of the book says that MySpace is the most popular website in America. Hasn't Facebook surpassed MySpace in popularity?
It has surpassed them worldwide, but MySpace is still ahead in the U.S., although MySpace has been stagnant and Facebook continues to grow. So I expect Facebook will overtake them.
Now, how do they even check these things? How do they measure whether one is more popular than the other?
You know, there's basically they count how many unique visitors come per month. So that's if you go 7 times, you're only counted once because you're one individual.
And what constitutes a visit? 2 seconds, or do you have to stay for 10 minutes at least?
I'm not sure what the minimum time is, but I could check on that for you. But it is, you know, it's the common metric that everyone uses is unique visitors per month.
Mm-hmm. And what about advertising sales? Wouldn't that also be a measure?
I mean, advertising sales, you can definitely measure because MySpace reports them publicly, and they are, you know, last quarter they had about $226 million in ad revenues.
Is there still concern about sites using any sort of spyware?
You know, every once in a while, some third-party advertiser will come on one of these sites, and when you click on their ad, which looks like some dancing rabbit or something, that it actually is some sort of spyware. But this, most of the sites have gotten pretty vigilant about chasing those advertisers off.
Didn't Elliot Spitzer sue Intermix in a big spyware case?
It did, actually. Right before Intermix sold itself to News Corp, it was under assault by Elliot Spitzer for distributing spyware. They had a pretty extensive spyware program. And the MySpace guys actually got off scot-free there. They had been distributing spyware, but they had shut down that part of their business and launched MySpace. So they were lucky that that business was shut down at that time.
And did they have to pay a fine?
Yes, they did. They paid a very big fine. And that's one reason that Intermix had to sell itself, is they couldn't even afford their fine of $7 million.
So Rupert Murdoch paid it off for them, in effect?
I believe so.
Do you think it hurt the site's future potential?
It was, well, it made it a better buy because no one wanted to touch it while Elliot Spitzer was chasing after Intermix. They were all worried about the size of the fine, but Rupert Murdoch was not scared off by it, and he bought, so he was able to get them probably at a cheaper price.
And I'm sure Rupert got his revenge on Elliot Spitzer when he reported on a certain aspect of Elliot Spitzer's life. Do you think people even remember that spyware case anymore?
No, not too many, although I do think there's a funny arc in Elliot Spitzer's life that the woman who he was consorting with was best known for her MySpace page.
So, she had a MySpace
yes.
page. Well, one of the other problems is that because you can lie about your age.
Yes. It's very hard to check people's ages, and most kids lie about their age to join MySpace because the minimum age is 13, but there are many 8- and 9-year-olds on there.
And what would an 8- and 9-year-old get out of being on MySpace?
Well, they want to be there because they want to be like the older kids. So they see the older kids are on there and they want to be on. And then it seems cool to them. And that's where MySpace really tries hard to find those kids and kick them off. But it's not easy when everyone is lying about their age. A lot of these kids say they're 100 years old or some silly thing like that. And it's hard to tell.
Well, I think it's easy to spot if they say they're 100.
Yes.
But I guess if you're 12 and you say you're 15, it's really hard to tell unless somebody checks your birth certificate.
Exactly.
Is Rupert Murdoch interested in buying other social networking type sites? For example,
yeah.
What about Twitter?
Yeah, well, I think like everybody, he's probably had a flirtation with Twitter. Twitter is the hot new site right now. And Twitter is perfectly distilled sort of the narcissism of MySpace and Facebook to its single essence, a small broadcast about yourself. And so it's becoming extremely popular. It's also an anonymous place like MySpace is. And Rupert always has his eye on these hot new things.
Why do you think Twitter has become so popular? Because it's allowed you to distill up to what end?
Well, I think there's a couple things about Twitter. One is...
Is this all like Match.com?
It's not. You know, the thing about Twitter is that on MySpace and Facebook, there's this fiction of friending, right? You send a friend request and somebody accepts it, and then you're supposedly friends. Well, you may or may not actually be friends. So on Twitter, they've gotten rid of that, and they call it what it is. You're a follower. You're a follower. So you just sign up to be somebody's follower, and they don't have to approve you. So it just makes the relationship less it makes it more honest, in my opinion.
Well, I have a Facebook page with thousands of friends. I don't know. I mean, I've met thousands of people in my life, but...
Right. You might not have met those thousands of people.
I don't think I've met those thousands of people.
That's why they should be your followers. I was looking for you on Twitter this morning. I didn't find you.
No, I'm not. I don't have a Twitter. So you have a Twitter?
Oh, yes.
I don't even know how to do that.
I think it would be very good for you because all your listeners are your followers. They follow you, and that's a good thing. They want to follow your movements.
Peter Chernin, who works for Fox and has been very involved in MySpace, is leaving the company, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
What impact do you think that his departure will have?
Well, look, Chernin was great for MySpace. He really ran two things there. He helped build the infrastructure. MySpace was on the verge of sort of technical collapse when Murdoch bought them. They were growing so fast, and they didn't have enough funding to keep up. So Chernin led tens of millions of dollars of effort of building up the infrastructure so the site would stop crashing all the time. The other thing he did was he really was the architect of the Google deal, the $900 million in guaranteed revenues that MySpace has, which has basically allowed MySpace to be the only profitable one of these social networking sites. And that's nothing to sneeze at. So Chernin's departure is not good news for MySpace. However, last week, News Corp announced it was going to hire a guy named John Miller, the former CEO of AOL, to oversee the digital properties, including MySpace. And John is a real visionary, and he may well be able to help MySpace regain ground on Facebook.
Well, considering the situation at AOL, is he really the right person for the job?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, but he was thrown.
I mean, I always wonder how these people who ran companies that have, in essence, failed. I don't know whether we can say AOL.
I think we
has
can.
Failed. How they become the right person for the next job.
Because you have to look at it this way. He came into AOL at the moment that it was already on the steep decline. What he did was a few strong moves that helped slow the decline and keep it profitable during its period of decline. So, look, he mitigated the situation. And maybe that's what they're looking for at MySpace.
Well, a couple of other top executives are also leaving, and I got the feeling that it's kind of like rats deserting a sinking ship.
At MySpace, you
yes.
mean? Yes. Well, there is an element of that, right? MySpace's deal with Google is up next year. It's not clear that they'll be able to be profitable once that expires. The two founders, Krista Wolf and Tom Anderson, their contracts are up in the fall, and they have very lucrative deals. It's not clear they'll be renewed at that rate. They may leave. And MySpace has been losing ground to Facebook. It's not a good time at MySpace right now.
My guest is Julia Angwin. Her book, Stealing MySpace, The Battle to Control the Most Popular Website in America, published by Random House. What was in it for Google? Why did they make this deal?
So Google has been in a race against Yahoo and Microsoft on who can dominate search. I mean, at this point, it's very clear that Google has won. But, you know, going back a few years at the time, Microsoft was still making a big push, and Yahoo still had a much more significant market share. And so basically, Google did this deal defensively because Yahoo and Microsoft both were willing to pay a huge amount of money to offer the search advertising on MySpace, which is a huge audience of 70 million people a month. And if you can guarantee those spots, you can keep your competitors out of it.
And why would they not do that again? Because they'd be more tempted to go to Facebook?
Well, MySpace is on the decline. And Google has publicly said that the deal didn't really work out for them. I think that they might renew the deal, but at a much lower rate. And these days, advertising is in decline everywhere. So it's just unlikely that they're going to renew at such an incredible rate.
But why do you think it is in decline if it satisfied all the needs of the people who wanted to sign up?
Yes, you know, that's a good point. And everyone says, oh, what's going to happen on the internet? None of these sites are profitable. Is there any future? Absolutely, there's a future. Where the audience is, the advertisers will eventually go. And the audience is definitely on these sites. So it's just a matter of advertisers switching their view about how they advertise and where. And I think that will inevitably happen. It could be a couple years.
Well, as you say, there are still some smart people working there. They must have some thoughts about where they want to take MySpace in the coming years.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that a few things need to happen at MySpace. One is they have to cut costs dramatically because their revenues are going to go down, and they're barely eking out a profit as it is. And two, they need to catch up with Facebook. Facebook has this amazing thing called the news feed that MySpace has still failed to replicate. I mean, MySpace is a sort of limited version of it, but mostly, MySpace looks sort of exactly as it did a few years back. And if you're not innovating on the internet, you're basically falling behind.
What is the news feed?
The news feed is that it used to be that I would have to go to, if I was your friend on Facebook, I would go to your site and see what you were doing. And I had to keep going to your page to do that. Now, the news feed delivers it to me. So all my friends' information about what they're doing is fed to me in a little middle column of the page. And that was a huge innovation that Facebook pioneered. It took MySpace a long time to come up even with its skeletal copy, and it has changed social networking.
The inevitable question about you working for Rupert Murdoch and writing this book has to be addressed.
Of course. We always have to address it.
I've waited till the end.
I appreciate that. I can do it at any time, though. When I left the Journal to write this book, we were not owned by Rupert Murdoch. We were owned by the Bancroft family, and I had no idea this deal was coming. I went out to write the book, and News Corp and MySpace did not cooperate. They did not want the book. Well, I don't know if they didn't want the book to be written, but they certainly didn't want to help me with it.
Well, it's not always a flattering portrait that you paint here.
Yeah, I mean, the facts are the facts. My feeling is it's always a good idea to put your spin on the facts, but obviously they didn't agree with that argument. So I didn't, while I was reporting the book, the deal happened, and I was on a leave from the Journal. Nothing changed because I didn't have a relationship with News Corp or MySpace, so nothing changed in my reporting or writing of the book. I was nervous coming back to the Journal, but actually it's been great. They ran an excerpt of the book. Everybody's treated me well. I'm technology editor. So I don't know. Seems to be fine. If I'm fired, I'll come back and tell you about it.
You say that there's that innovation is constant on the internet. What else can be done in this area? Or it seems to me more likely people just get tired of this and move on to something else.
I don't think so. I think we are going to always want some way to express who we are online. You know, these sites are really about giving your identity a digital identity. So what I think is going to happen next is we need to have ways to express more than one part of our identity. Right now, you go to Facebook and you set up a site and you're Leonard Lopate and you can only be really who you are, which is your brand. You're a radio personality. But
who else do I want to be?
Well, you might want to be a husband or a father or a devotee of gourmet cooking or whatever hobbies. And you may not want that to merge with your radio identity. So I think what we need now is more fine-tuning of these networks, that we can express different aspects of our personality to different people. Because ultimately, do you really want your employer to know all that stuff about you?
Well, that's a problem anyway. One day, I Googled my name. I shouldn't have done it. And I discovered that there was a Wikipedia thing for me, which was filled with misinformation. It had me married when I wasn't married. It was conjecturing on my birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
All sorts of different stuff. But people had put it together based on news articles.
Right.
Many of they even had me owning a dog I didn't own. and my response was, I'm not going to change it.
Well,
I'm not going to correct this.
Wikipedia would appreciate if you corrected it, I'm sure. But that is a problem. And I believe that's what I call the unitary identity online. We are forced into this one identity of what comes up in your Google search. And I hope that in the future we'll be able to express different aspects of ourselves online.
Now, why do you think Facebook hasn't been as popular with bands as MySpace?
Well, Facebook doesn't offer bands as much. MySpace allows you to take over the whole page and customize it with blinking and flashing. A MySpace page is a really kind of chaotic but very personalized experience. Whereas on Facebook, it's a template. You can put your photo in, but otherwise Facebook controls the page.
So if you're a band that wants to establish some kind of presence, and right now it's really hard because the record business is so messed up.
Right.
Then Facebook is a way of putting out a new release and getting people to know who you are. But how do the people who you might want to reach even know that you're there?
Once again, bands go and send out friend requests. And some bands have huge numbers of friends. And that's how they market themselves. And they also can stream some of their music. MySpace will choose a few bands to put on the front page. And so there's ways for them to spread themselves throughout the community.
Julia, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I think you probably you're up to here with these websites. Or is there more to tell? A follow-up book?
There probably is.
This book is called Stealing MySpace, The Battle to Control the Most Popular Website in America. It is published by Random House. And Julia, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.